because sometimes, I feel like people get confused about what the purpose of the course is, and sometimes they think that the course is, if they study the course, it necessarily means their career is going to go better. It's going to be more money coming in, or sort of like the manifesting stuff. And what I found is that funny thing about it is when you really focus on who you really are and really focus on your spiritual awareness, a lot of those things really do start to fall into place. But that's not really the purpose of the course. The course is to teach a person of how to look at things in such a way that they have internal peace and peace of mind, so that nothing that you go through in the outer world will disturb your peace. So the purpose of the course is to teach you a new way of looking at things so that you don't constantly lose your peace because of the different things that you are perceiving and going through in your experience every day. And the premise of the course is that if you have internal peace, how you doing? If you have internal peace, then when your mind is still, then you can hear the voice for God, which is your inner guidance. Because everybody's getting inner guidance. But in our culture especially, we're so externally oriented that we don't know how to listen within anymore. You know, we're so constantly programmed to believe it's about the outside and material things and maybe getting a special romantic relationship that we don't go inside and see what kind of guidance we're getting from within. So the course is about removing the blocks to the awareness of love, the blocks to the awareness of peace. And I think that makes all the difference in the world in terms of whether or not a person really benefits through it. The guidelines in the course are really cool because it basically says that in order to do the material, it's important to keep in mind that you don't have to believe it, you don't have to accept it, you don't have to welcome it, that some of the ideas will be hard to believe, that some of the ideas will startle you, and if you use it, you'll see that it works. But contrary to the way that we've been taught to learn most things, if you analyze it, then you just disorient and confuse yourself. So our learning from the world is all about analysis. So the first thing that most people try to do when they hear the course is to analyze it. And usually they do that by taking their past learnings and then trying to fit the Course in Miracles into what they've already learned. So that when they hear something in the course that's different from what they've learned, and that's where the resistance comes up. That's where he says it'll startle you, it'll be hard to believe, because it's not necessarily trying to reinforce what you already believe. It's trying to give us a whole new perception. So in the section that I'm covering now, which is called What It Says, which is a Roman numeral X, it's right at the beginning of the book before you get into the first chapter. I'm going to read a paragraph, and then I'm going to come back and clarify what the paragraph is saying, and we can discuss it if we like, and then we'll move on to the next paragraph. Because on the Wednesday class is usually a much smaller class, and so we get a chance to do more discussion. But hopefully not analyzing, but hopefully some clarification. So, Roman numeral 11, it starts out with the paragraph that says, "The world we see merely reflects our own internal frame of reference." Everybody see that? It's got the book. I also have a spare if someone needs one. It says, "The world we see merely reflects our own internal frame of reference." Then if you'll notice, it has a little dash there, and it's about to describe what it means by that. It means the world we see merely reflects our dominant ideas, wishes, and emotions in our minds. Projection makes perception. That's in the text on page 445. It says, projection makes perception. Then the course explains what it means. When you read the course, it reads as if we don't understand what it's talking about. So it defines everything it says as it goes along. Like, for instance, it says, "The world we see merely reflects our own internal frame of reference." What does that mean? The dominant ideas, wishes, and emotions in our mind. What does that mean? Projection makes perception. He says, well, what does projection make perception mean? It means we look inside first, decide the kind of world we want to see, and then project that world outside, making that world the truth as we see it. We make it the truth as we see it by our interpretations of what it is we are seeing. if we are using perception to justify our own mistakes, our anger, our impulses to attack, our lack of love, in whatever form it may be, then we see a world of evil, destruction, malice, envy, and despair. All this we must learn to forgive, not because we're being good and charitable, but because what we are seeing is not true. We have distorted the world by our twisted defenses and are therefore seeing what is not there. As we learn to recognize our perceptual errors, we also learn to look past our perceptual errors or forgive. At the same time, we are forgiving ourselves. That means looking past our distorted self-concepts to the self that God created in us and as us. So that's the whole book. And one paragraph is really the whole book. It's almost like the book is holographic. Any part of the book describes the whole book. So let's go back. Pencils, and I like to use myself as an example because I like to make the course real. Okay. You're looking at me right now. That merely reflects your own internal frame of reference. So when you look at me, you're just seeing your dominant ideas, your wishes, and the emotions in your mind. So that means projection is making perception. So we look inside first. We look inside our own mind first, which is the same as saying we're looking at our beliefs and we're looking at our thoughts. Then we decide what we want to see. And he says, and then we project that outside of us and we make it true as we see it. If I look inside myself and I've decided I feel depressed today, then when I look out, I'm just going to see things that depress me all day. If I had a negative experience with a person who wears red, then when I see a person that wears red, I'm going to project that on that person and have some fear around the person that wears red. You follow what I'm saying? It's like we look inside first, and then we look outside, and then we make it true. And that's so important. He says, then he tells us how we make it true. The Course says we make it true by our interpretations of what we're seeing. So, the Course says, if you're using your perception to justify your anger, your impulses to attack, or your lack of love, he says, then you see a world of evil, destruction, malice, envy, and despair. So, if a person is seeing a world of evil, malice, envy, and despair, then the Course says what they're doing is using their perception to justify their own anger. If I'm upset, there's a reason why I'm upset. So if I'm upset, I have to see something that upsets me. So if I walk around upset all the time, I'm really looking at a justification of what I'm feeling. So the world is, in a sense, a justification for the way that I feel. And what I see is a justification for what I feel. So whatever I see is just justifying what I feel, according to the Course. And so it says we must learn to forgive it. And he says not because we're trying to be good, not because we're trying to be charitable, because most people ought to realize that being good does not make your life work. We all know stories of people who are good who get slammed all the time. So just being good is definitely not no guarantee. I'm not saying being good isn't cool, but being good isn't what makes your life work. Being conscious and being loving and knowing your connection to God or truth is what makes your life work. Having the correct perception is what makes it work. Being good doesn't necessarily make it work. There are really good people who have totally wrong beliefs. There are many good people who perceive incorrectly. So the Course is saying it's not about being good. It's not about being charitable, because what we're seeing isn't true. The Course is saying we've got to learn how to recognize our perceptual errors. And then he says we also learn to look past our perceptual errors, and that's what forgiving is. Forgiving is me learning how to look past the incorrect perceptions that I have, or me learning how to no longer use the old learning that I got from the world. The Course's definition of forgiveness is not, I'm trying to overlook what you really did to me, which is the world's perception of forgiveness. You really did something to me, and I'm going to try to overlook that because I'm more loving than you. So that whole definition of forgiveness from a Course perspective has to be thrown out, or else the Course in Miracles would be very difficult whenever it talks about forgiving. It's not talking about overlooking what someone did to you. It's talking about using the truth to interpret your life. It's talking about using what you're learning now as your way of interpreting what's going on in your life. In other words, I'm learning how to look past my internal perceptions and emotions and wishes that are not based on love. That I'm willing to go past my fear, past my anger, past my guilt, and really extend peace into the world. That's forgiveness. It's not, I'm trying to overlook what my brother did to me when I was 10 years old. That's not the Course in Miracles, the Course in Miracles definition of forgiveness. That is the world's definition of forgiveness. So if you're trying to use that definition of forgiveness, then the Course will be difficult. Because that's not what it's asking you to do. It's not asking you to overlook something you think really happened. It's trying to get us to see that the way we are responding to what we see is coming from our own interpretation. And that interpretation is what's determining how you feel right now. No matter what happened when you were 10, what's causing you to feel the way you do about it is what you're telling yourself right now about what happened when you was 10. Because what happened to you when you were 10 is not happening in this moment. So, therefore, if whatever feelings you have about what happened when you were 10, that's coming from what you're telling yourself now. So forgiveness is looking past the interpretations that you learn to use that cause you pain. So, let me throw that open. Any comments about that? Or any clarification about that?
Until we become aware of this, so many times that perception we have, we're not even conscious we're doing it.
Absolutely.
It's so ingrained in us, we just react.
That
was... The person in red was the person in red from 10 years ago. Yeah. We don't even realize it.
No. It's like emotion. The Course, it says an emotion is something that you've given, a feeling is something that you've given an emotionally charged meaning. Mm-hmm. So when I react to something, it's still just a belief, but it's like you said, but it's a belief that's so ingrained that I don't even think about it. It's not even a conscious process anymore.
Right.
And that's why people say, I can't control my emotions. I can't help how I feel. Yeah, of course you can control your emotions. Of course you can choose to feel different, but things that's so ingrained in you that you're not even conscious of it, yeah, it will look like that's beyond your control, but it's really not. At some point when you change your interpretation, you will change your emotion, and as you study the truth, you'll find that you just don't react to things that you used to react to the way you did. If you're really doing it consistently, one day you'll notice, I used to really get upset about that, but I didn't even notice that anymore. Your whole emotional reaction has changed because you've been learning new interpretations. That's why the most important thing about the Course is remembering. And that's why all through the book it says, remember this, don't forget this, remember this. It says it a million times in the book. It never says analyze this, it says remember this. And so when I do a class, that's why I say a lot of the same things over and over. I do that purposely because that's how you do it. That's how you get to the next level, is by remembering. Anybody else? Any comments about that paragraph? That paragraph is incredible.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You're talking about forgiveness regarding things in the past. What about right now? How do you define how we forgive?
There's some more chairs in there.
Things that are happening right now.
It's the same thing. It's your interpretation of what's going on right now that's determining what you're feeling right now. And so what the Course does is give you new interpretations. And the main interpretation that is happening right now is that everything that we're going through is either love or it's a call for love. It's either the truth or it's a call to remember the truth. So the Course just starts to redefine all the things that we're going through right now. Like, for instance, if I'm angry at you, well, instead of you saying Earl is mad at me, from a Course perspective, you would say, Earl has a call for love right now. He has a deep call for peace right now. He has a deep call for help right now. And believing that I'm calling for help and believing that I'm calling for love will give you a different reaction to what I'm doing than if you thought I was trying to just attack you and hurt you. So by giving yourself a new interpretation, you learn an emotional reaction. But at first, when you say that it's a call for love or a call for help, it may not necessarily make you feel any better because it's a new way of responding. So in the beginning, when you start using new interpretations, it won't necessarily create an emotional difference. But if you continue to use those interpretations, then it begins to change your emotional response. And sometimes what keeps people from consistently using the truth is that they'll use it one time. They don't get a big earth-shattering change, and they don't use it anymore. And it's very few people that can drive in a nail with one blow. You know what I'm saying? Usually you go bump, 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 bam. Then the nail goes in. Very few people go bam. So that's the way it is with the truth. It's like the truth isn't going to go in just because you say it once. But if you keep saying it over and over and over and over again, make sure you're not parking on this side of the street, because if you are, you'll get a ticket.
Four cars showed up down there tonight.
Yeah.
They will get a $20 fine.
Sorry. Yeah, this is
a time to turn the church.
Yeah, this is it. So, yeah, so that's the same thing. It's like even if, like you mentioned about if something is happening now, even if I'm remembering something that happened in the past, I'm really remembering what happened in the past now. So it's still a present moment interpretation that I got to change, regardless of whether I'm thinking of something from the past or thinking about something now. It's still right now that I need to do that. And the Course says it's a matter of motivation. I always think about that. It says that your willingness to look at it another way is just a matter of motivation. So the question comes down to, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? So if I want to be right that you hurt me, then I'm not going to be motivated to look at it another way. And what I'm going to do is give you all the justifications for why I need to still stay angry at you. But all that means is, like you said, all that means is I still want to justify, I'm using my perception to justify my anger. And if I want to use my perception to justify my anger, then I'm going to focus on what it is that makes me mad at you. So if all I'm focusing on is what makes me mad at you, then I'm just trying to justify my decision to stay mad at you. But if I really don't want to be mad at you, then I'm open to another way to look at it that would change my feelings. So if I'm with a person and all of a sudden they want to justify their perception, then I immediately just back off. Just because, okay, you want to keep that perception, that's your right to keep that perception, which means you really don't want to change that perception. You know, you can't really want to change a perception and then fight every other perception that you get that would change the perception. So you kind of like have to be honest with yourself about how sincere you are about wanting to look at it differently. Because if you want to look at it differently, the book is full of other ways to look at it. And so in my Course class, that's why I never defend the ideas. Because what's the point? You know, if a person really wants to look at it differently, then I can give them some suggestions. But if they don't, then it's nothing I'm going to say that's going to change their mind. So it's a waste of my time and it's a waste of their time too, until they've had enough, you know. So what will happen if it is something in your life right now that's causing you a lack of peace? Then if you study the Course in Miracles, it will give you a lot of new interpretations of it that could change your mind about it, if you would like to. Okay. We're on Roman numeral 11. We're in the preface at the very, very beginning. I'm going through the part of the Course that talks about what it says. Mm-hmm. Was there anything in that paragraph that anybody heard that was particularly helpful to them?
I feel like the word interpretation is what we call judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's an interpretation too.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I love the word interpretation. The Course says another word for perception is interpretation. So when I say I perceive you, that's one thing. When I say I interpret you, then that has a lot more power for me. Because changing my perception can sound hard, but for some reason changing my interpretation of you sounds easier. Mm-hmm. Even though that's the same as changing my perception of you. Like if I was taught to interpret you as being a woman who was separate from me, the Course is saying, you're not a woman that's separate from me. You are really me. Expressing through what appears to be a woman. You and I are really joined. We're really connected. We're really one. We're really love. We're really spirit. That interpretation of you can give me a brand new experience of you. Interpreting you as a woman brings up all my past experiences with women. And then I project that past experience of women on you, and I look at you in terms of my past experiences with women, and I don't really see who you are at all. You become every woman that I had an experience with before I met you. You know, I become every black person you've ever seen and heard about, you know. And based on most of the stuff that people see on TV, you know, it's amazing they don't get up and run out of the room whenever a black person walks in. Because that's what we're being programmed. That's what we're being projected to see and believe. You know, every black kid is a rapper. You know what I'm saying? So it's the same thing. So we see these projections, and then when we see it, you know, then we project it on the person that's coming. Then if you're a white woman walking down the street and a young black guy is walking towards you, in a lot of cases the person's going to grab their purse and want to go to the other side of the street if that's what they've learned to perceive. So again, we're really reacting to what we've learned more so than what's actually really happening in the moment. Absolutely. Absolutely. My experience of females and males, they're totally different than the experience that I had of females and males before I got in the Course in Miracles. There's no comparison. It's almost like I'm in another reality now. And that's, and I like this one a lot better. Mm-hmm.
Is, I have trouble seeing projection and perception as being continuity, you know, having mm-hmm. that continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Would projection be more like, or somewhat like the law of attraction?
Well, projection from a course perspective, it would be different from a law of attraction. It would work with a law of attraction in the sense that what you perceive and what you believe would be what you would attract to you. Yeah. In that sense, they would be related in my perception. But the way the course means projection is, like what you said here, I'm taking my interpretations and I'm projecting them or seeing them in you. That's what it means by projection. You know, I took the thoughts in my mind and I put them on you. Yeah.
So the thing I get out of this is forgiveness is like, if you're looking at it from the Course's perspective, there was never anything to really forgive in the first place.
Could you elaborate on that more? I agree with what you're saying, but could you elaborate on that more?
I'm not sure how to verbalize it.
Yeah. I started to say that, but it usually makes people so mad that I don't see it. Really, because it really takes. It's like to me, that's like the advanced level. Like when you can get to the level that you understand there's nothing to forgive in the first place.
Yeah.
You're like at the most advanced level of interpretation. And what usually happens in a group is when you say that, it brings up in the person all the justifications why that really happened, and then. Even though it's not the purpose, it can sidetrack the energy in a whole other direction in terms of people getting indignant. What do you mean that didn't really happen? You know, that really did happen to me. You know what I mean? So a lot of times, even though what the truth says is absolutely true, a lot of times I purposely not say it simply because after 26 years of teaching this, I know the trigger statements that take people all off into a direction that nothing else happens for the next the rest of the hour, but defending that idea. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like a person, because a person immediately reduces to the physical level. Don't tell me that I don't need to forgive the guy who robbed me. I really was robbed. So you mean forgiveness means that I'm forgiving somebody for what they never did. So then, because the mind has a tendency to reduce everything down to a physical thing, and the Course is talking about perception. It's not talking about physical. It's talking about the way that I'm seeing it. Because on a high, when you really and truly advance and really and truly wake up to who you are as an unlimited created being, what you realize is that you are the creator of everything that happens in your life. But at the very beginning, that's not the idea to focus on. The Course says, you know, that's not even what you're being asked to accept in the beginning. It says that in the beginning, what you're being asked to accept if you're just getting started is that what you know may not be all there is to know. He says that a beginner starts at, I don't know everything. A beginner doesn't start at, I created everything in my experience. You know, just like I tell, you know, a beginner doesn't start at, I'm going to try to forgive my uncle that molested me. A beginner starts at, I'm going to forgive the person who took my parking space. You see what I'm saying? It's like you don't start at the most challenging thing, which is where the ego mind always tries to take us. It always tries to take us to the most extreme example first, because that's the best way in the world to kill your momentum. is to start with the hardest person. Read us about forgiving, and then try to start with the guy who, like in my case, the person that murdered my nephew. So I wouldn't start with the person that murdered my nephew. You know what I'm saying? I start with the person who skipped in front of me in the line when I was at the grocery store. I wouldn't never go for the most intense situations to apply the truth to. Always start with the easier ones and let yourself have some successes and keep studying and then keep building on those successes, and then you'll naturally move into what you think of now as being like the things you could never forgive. That would be my suggestion. Okay. Let's take the next paragraph. Let's talk about sin. I remember I didn't want to hear the word sin because of my religious upbringing and background. Just the word sin made me go, ugh. Anybody had that whole thing? You hear the word sin, you go, ugh. Right? Just let me know part of me still believed in it. You know, that's what the Course says. Whatever you revolt against, you still believe. Whatever generates an emotional reaction, it generates an emotional reaction because you still get power to that idea. So the things that I can't even stand to say are obviously the things I still give a lot of power to. So the Course says sin is defined as a lack of love. Since love is all there is, sin in the sight of the Holy Spirit, sin is a mistake to be corrected rather than an evil to be punished. So the Course in Miracles definition of sin is it's a mistake that needs to be corrected. Our sense of inadequacy, weakness, and incompletion comes from the strong investment in the scarcity principle that governs the whole world of illusion. From that point of view that there is scarcity, we seek in others what we feel is wanting or lacking in ourselves. We love another in order to get something ourselves. We love another in order to get something ourselves. In fact, that is what passes for love. And of course calls this the dream world. In the dream world, there can be no greater mistake than that. Doing what? Loving another in order to get something for ourselves. He says, there can be no greater mistake than that. For real love or love is incapable of asking for anything. That's, each paragraph is like. All right. So when I say I believe in sin, I'm really saying that I believe in mistakes to be corrected. Whatever I see, if I feel like I'm a sinner, then I believe there are mistakes in myself that need to be corrected, not that I'm an evil person that needs to be punished. The purpose of the Course is to take stuff that we've already learned, give us new interpretations of it, so that we can be freed from it. I could spend the rest of my life avoiding hearing the word sin, or I could just learn the correct interpretation of the word sin, apply that interpretation whenever I hear the word sin, and then free myself when I hear the word sin. Instead of freaking myself out when I hear the word sin, avoiding the word sin, I could just give myself a new definition because I'm in the world. So I'm going to hear the word sin. So am I going to avoid everything that the words and everybody that this word sin might come up in? Or will I learn a new definition of sin that so that when I hear it, it won't bother me at all? I'm going to go for the latter. I'd much rather learn new interpretations than spend the rest of my life trying to avoid everything that I think is going to upset me. So sin, from a Course perspective, is a lack of love and it's a mistake to be corrected. And he says that the reason why we feel weak and the reason why we feel inadequate is because we invest in the belief that there's a scarcity of love. And so he says, since we believe there's a scarcity of love, we seek in others the love that we feel like is missing in ourselves. So I'm seeking to have a relationship with you because I really feel like I don't have love, so I'm going to get some love from you. Not only am I going to get some love from you, I'm so afraid of losing the love that I'm getting from you because I don't feel the love within myself that I'm going to make sure you don't give anybody else any love or attention either. Anybody recognize that? Anybody recognize that? That's what the Course says, that's what we call love in the world. Most of the time when people form a relationship with somebody that they really love, the first thing they want to do is lock it up. Right? I want to lock it up, and I want to make, you're mine.
It's mine.
It's mine. That's locking it up. It's mine. Why? Because I don't think that there's enough to go around, so therefore I've got to get it from you. I got to get something from you that I don't have in myself. The Course says there can be no greater mistake than that, because real love doesn't ask for anything. Real love, it just gives itself. So the Course is teaching me the difference between real love and fake love. And it's also about that paragraph. Now, I know if nobody said they have no thoughts about that paragraph, they're probably not being honest.
When I first started studying the Course like 6 years ago, I got to that part and I shut down.
My experience is that in all the years I've taught the Course, that is what makes people quit the Course. It's what the Course teaches about love. It's the thing that people can pretty much stretch till they get to the love part. And chapters, I've run more people off in chapters 15, 16, and 17 than any other chapters of the Course in Miracles that I teach. It's always just, have to just go in and go, okay, it's been nice seeing half the people in the class, and I wish them well, and now I'm going to cover chapter 15. Because beyond a doubt, people run for the hills when they hear stuff like love isn't capable of asking for anything. When you love another person in order to get something for yourself, that's not real love. Because that's what we've been taught love is. It's possession. Complete possession. And love isn't possession.
Love is not.
Love is not possession. It's not scarcity. It's not missing.
Well, the scarcity thing is a whole turnaround. That's just... a hard thing to think.
Well, it's like a person who has not gotten in touch with the love in themselves is sort of like, when you love them, it's sort of like throwing water into a bottomless pit.
Yeah.
You never do enough. You never give enough to a person who hasn't found it within themselves. And the more you give, the more they demand. And oddly enough, the more you give to them, the more restrictions they come up with. For you, in order to assure that they keep the love. And so they'll start trying to chop off your freedom so that they can make sure that all of your attention is completely focused on them. Which is nothing wrong with you wanting to give your love to a person, but when you're giving your love to a person who doesn't love themselves, they can't recognize it and they can't appreciate it unless they want to know the love in themselves. If they want to know the love in themselves, then you all can together learn to recognize the love in each other. But if they have a core belief that you are the one that holds the love, then no matter what you do, you'll never do enough. That's different from saying, I got some insecurities and some fears, and I want to go beyond these insecurities and fears with you. And let's practice doing what it would take to lose these insecurities and fears. Which means we're gonna apply the truth to our relationship, even though we both got fear. That's not the same as being in a relationship with someone who doesn't want to do the work and they have the fear and they just want you to get rid of their fear. That's two different things. So if you're in a relationship with someone who doesn't want to own that they need to change their own mind so that they can let go of their fear, you would just go be in a sacrifice relationship. You'll be constantly sacrificing, and your sacrifice will never be enough until they decide to change their mind about themselves. At that point, you could do it together, because I'm not completely aware of the love in myself 100%. So it's highly unlikely I'm going to meet somebody that's going to fall in love with me that's aware of the love in themselves 100%. They're probably going to be just like me. Since like attracts like. So, is that saying I can't be in a relationship until I love myself? No, but if I'm going to be in a relationship, I need to keep in mind that the purpose of that relationship is for me to learn how to remove the blocks to the love that's in me. So together, we're doing it together, but we're assuming some responsibility for our feelings. Does that make sense to everybody? most cases, the physical attraction is so strong that a person overlooks stuff like that. Okay? Because, it's the truth. Most people are not attracted to people for their minds. Sorry to say. Most people are not attracted to people for their spirit. They're usually attracted to people what? Out of the scarcity principle. So they're really attracted to people in order to get something that they feel is lacking. You know? That's why, it's something the person has. It's something the person does. It's how the person looks. It can be the person's intelligence. But it's still something about the person that the person wants to get, that they want to have. And so that's what they're saying. Coming from that scarcity principle, then it increases your sense of inadequacy and weakness. And actually, you feel more insecure. Like if you get with a person whose capacity to express love, it seems like it's greater than yours. In most cases, it doesn't make the person feel more secure. It has a tendency, in my experience, to make the other person feel more insecure. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make you feel more secure if it looks like the person you're with can do everything that you can't do. You know, that's why, I think it'd be a challenge to be Jesus' best friend. You know, we go up to City Park, we walk up to the lake, and he walks across it. I'm going to feel a little inadequate. You know what I'm saying? I'm standing there like, hey, I got to have a boat. Wait a minute, Hey, Jesus, come on back. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm having to pull out my wallet and pay for my dinner, and Jesus, whoops out some fish and loaves of bread immediately. I got some inferiority stuff coming up. So personally, that's what I said. Wait a minute. That's right. You know, so he turns his wallet into wine. I'm still sitting up there with a Mountain Dew. You know what I mean? I'm like, wait a minute, now something wrong with this. So really you feel much more innocent with people who are more than equal to you than people who are unequal to you. Even if you're the same equal in your jealousy or the same equal in your insecurity, you would actually feel better. If you're a really jealous person, you could relate to having a really jealous mate better than you could relate to having a mate who wasn't jealous. So I think that's interesting that most people ask for partners who have qualities that they don't have, but if that person existed, you have to ask yourself, would that person want me? Like if I ask the average person, I said this before in the class, if you ask the average person, what kind of mate would you like to have? They say, I want somebody that's loving, forgiving, kind, generous, prosperous, secure, fun, centered. And then I asked them, I said, would a person like that want you? And they go, what? I went, would a person like that want you? I mean, if a person really has all of those qualities and you have none of those qualities, you're jealous, you're insecure, you're afraid to love, you're defensive, you're suspicious, it takes I don't know what to get you to open up. And you put a person through the test of Hades just to go out with you. Why? How would that person want you? And they go, oh. And I used to do that all the time. I would, on your creative visualization list and all that stuff, I'd just be putting down people with all kinds of qualities that would never want me. If they could see, why would you want me? You know? So the truth is, I have to become it if I want to have it.
You come across someone like that, you put them in the friend zone.
Oh yeah, you immediately, you sound like a person who has to, you sound like you're speaking from experience.
You want to pass her there until you're ready for it.
I used to be funny, I had a couple of girls when I was in high school broke up with me because I was too nice. And I was like, oh, what you want me to do, smack you upside the head or something, and you can love me? But there's a lot of truth to that. There's a lot of truth. Women may not realize it, but it looks like in a regular mindset, and I know what you can share with me coming from the female perspective, but women tend to like bad boys. Oh, yeah. They say they want the good guy, but the good guy always becomes the friend that they talk about the bad boy that they got passion with.
He's the priest.
Yeah, so you become the priest, that's the friend, and then all the passion and love goes to the bad boy who's giving them hell.
Meaning that's just the like attractor. Light, that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're attracted to that dark.
Yeah, because there's a part of you that doesn't even believe you deserve to have a man that treats you with respect and love. But you don't realize it until, and that works both ways.
Yeah.
And you don't realize it until you actually see who you're attracted to. See, that's what I notice. It's like, you can talk all you want to me, but I'm checking out your mate. And I'm checking out your boyfriend. And I'm checking out your girlfriend. Because who you attracted to as your intimate partner says more about your consciousness than all the truth that you're talking to me about. You know? Because all of us can put forth a good image.
Yeah.
But in the end, who you feel emotionally drawn to is telling you a lot about what you believe about yourself. And people get disgusted sometimes when they hear that, or they feel inspired. Like if you're with a partner that you really feel like, wow, this is a great person, or a great friend, and I really admire them, and they're really cool, and I really appreciate them, and I really love them, then evidently it's a part of me that really loves myself, because I'm drawing that back to me through the people in my environment. But I could sit up here and say, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself, but all my friends judge me, my mate judge me, my parents judge me, my boss judge me, everybody around me is criticizing, condemning me, disappointing me, not appreciating me. Then if I want to get out of that, at some level, I have to admit to myself that there's got to be some part of me that I'm not aware of that is not loving me. Rather than beat myself up, it's just a way for me to get in touch that there's some work that needs to be done. It's not for me to beat myself up. But a person that says, I'm really cool, but everybody else is the problem, that's an unconscious person. When you're the only person that's cool and everybody else is the problem, you're not awake. You're not awake, you know. So I used to get upset about being put in the friend zone because I have that happen. You can imagine that happens to you, how much it happens to me. But when I realized I was being protected, my whole attitude about it changed. Because really what they were doing was giving me the most loving kind of relationship I could have with them. So by saying you're putting me in the friend zone, they actually put me in the protected zone. You know, I've even had relationships that you could be so aware of your track record with getting physically intimate or intimate with somebody that you'll say, because I want to save our relationship and because you're valuable to me, I'm not going to be your boyfriend and I'm not going to be your girlfriend and I'm not going to go to bed. Because my track record, the people that I allowed myself to become intimate with, is that most of them not around no more. And when we do break up, we don't even communicate anymore. And your relationship with me is too valuable for me to take that chance. Have you ever had that kind of feeling about somebody that you knew you didn't do it because you knew your record? It didn't mean like it had to always be that way in the future, but you were at least conscious enough to know what your pattern is. And your pattern is who you're physically intimate with. If it doesn't work out, you're no longer friends anymore, and you're no longer communicating anymore, and you no longer do anything anymore, which is the pattern in our culture. So a lot of times if I feel attracted to somebody, I ask myself, do I really want to take a chance on losing this relationship if it doesn't work out? Because I know how we tend to do it if it doesn't work out. And you find yourself going, well, I think I will keep it in the friend zone. Because I noticed that the ones that I keep in the friend zone, they last for years. And the ones I put in the intimate special zone, But what happens when I know the love in myself, it's all that's a moot point. All that goes out the window. Because if you're giving and receiving real love, you're going to receive and give real love. It's going to come to you. And if you're with a conscious being is not going to stop loving you just because you might change the form of the relationship. A conscious being, you all may not be intimate anymore. You might change from being boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is. But the relationship is so important that you still want to maintain the relationship but in a more peaceful form. So if you're conscious, you'll change the form to maintain the relationship. If you're unconscious, the form is more important than the relationship. So therefore, for instance, if we can't be boyfriend and girlfriend, then I don't want to see you at all. That's putting the form before the relationship. In most cases, that's what happens if the body gets involved. Everybody to me, been around long enough to be familiar. A lot of stuff I'm talking about, we should just know from our life experience. It shouldn't even be a thing of, is that true or not? We should just know that from having lived here over 15 years. Yeah.
I have a question with the relationship you described as someone who does not love themselves so much. She does it so well. And my brother, her husband, that sacrificing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought this weekend, I've been saying it for 20 years. What's going to happen? I guess in my mind, I keep thinking there'll be a shift or a change or... Like, he's sacrificing and sacrificing, and all of a sudden he's going to say, I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just curious what it looks like. What happens?
Well, what happens is that if a person continues to sacrifice and continues to sacrifice, what they're really doing is building resentment. Mm-hmm. Unless, now the Course calls our special relationships bargains made with guilt. Now, what that means is, if he's making his sacrifice and she's making her sacrifice, then they could have a their 60th anniversary one day. Because as long as both people feel like the bargain is being met, then they'll stay together. It, no matter what that bargain is. It's like, you know, if I'm making my sacrifice for you, but you also sacrificing your happiness for me. In other words, you'll put what I want before what you want, and I'll put what you want before I want. And I feel like it's fair. You know, I might not go bowling because you don't like bowling, but you know what I'm saying? You'll sacrifice and watch bowling with me, even though you don't like bowling. Then we can stay together as long as if I can feel like it's an equal bargain going on.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And if there's an equal bargain going on, if both people are keeping the agreement, then the relationship could last a lifetime. And the people could appear to be very happy in that relationship in terms of feeling like the sacrifice is worth it. Okay, which is different from love.
Well, he says you learn to love. That's just what he tells me. You learn to love someone, which I don't know what that means.
Well, to me, that's another way of saying that he's seeing it as a sacrifice. Because, see, the Course says loss is a perception. That loss isn't a reality. Okay? So if he's making what appears to be a sacrifice, but for him it isn't because he wants to do it, then he's not sacrificing. Okay? If he really is not doing something because he really is okay about not doing it if it's what she would like, and he's okay with that, then he's not sacrificing.
That might be love for him,
though. That's what I'm saying. The Course says sacrifice or loss is a personal interpretation. That's why it's not real. What would be a sacrifice for me might not be a sacrifice for somebody else. So if it's not a sacrifice for him, then he's giving love in the way that he gives love, and that's cool. If he doesn't feel like he's losing as a result of how he's expressing, then he is not sacrificing. But if he resents what he's doing, then he's sacrificing. That's the difference. Like parents will say, well, I sacrifice for my kids. I work 7 hours a week. Where there's some fathers and mothers that work 7 hours a week and they want to do it for their kids. They feel good about what they do for their kids. So that's not a sacrifice. They would never say to their kids, I sacrifice for you. They would say, I love you. And this is how I express my love for you. I was glad to do what I did because I love you. So that's the difference. Where the parent that resents it, that's a sacrifice for them. And you better believe they're going to take it back out of their kids one day in terms of reminding their kids what their kids owe them. That's the parent that sacrificed for their kids. They'll be going, you owe me this. You don't know what I went through so that you could go to college. That's sacrifice. You know. I was glad to do that for you because I love you to put you through college. That's love. It's just how you perceive it. That's what the Course keeps saying. It's all perceptual, which is so cool. It's all perceptual.
It's like they forgot that they were giving and decided to turn it over into negative.
Right. Right. It's so much easier to love and appreciate people you love and appreciate. That's why I try to stack things in my favor by really spending time with people that I love and appreciate and doing things that I love and appreciate and offering things in a way that works for me. That way it's not a strain. And so when I say I love you, I really mean it because I really do. But the ego, as the Course puts it, or the fearful part of the man, it does just the opposite. It thinks that love is about putting all your attention on the people that you don't love or you upset with, and you spend all your time trying to make yourself like them and love them. And then when you can somehow or another convince yourself to like them and love them, you are now growing. And then the people you do love and appreciate and do have peace with, you don't give them any attention because you think that relationship is okay. So therefore, I don't really need to give them any attention. So I'm going to focus all my attention on Cousin Harry, who we haven't got along since we was 3 years old. And if I can take the truth of the path of Cousin Harry, that's where all my energy is. Again, a conscious being knows, no, I bless and release Cousin Harry. And I let Cousin Harry have his life the way Cousin Harry wants to have his life. And I'm open to having peace with Cousin Harry when Cousin Harry wants to have peace. But you know who I'm spending my time with? Cousin Susan. Cousin Susan and I get along, we communicate, we have peace. So what's happening? With Cousin Susan, I'm actually increasing my level of love and appreciation. Cousin Harry, I'm decreasing my feeling of love and appreciation. So eventually I have so much love and appreciation around me that it just overflows into Cousin Harry. My life is so cool that Cousin Harry couldn't upset me if Cousin Harry wanted to. Because everything is cool. So I find that the more love I have in my life, the easier it is for me to deal with the one or two people or three or four people that I don't. But I used to do it the other way. Ignore the people because I thought we were okay. But what it amounts to is I didn't invest in them. And I invested where I thought the scarcity was located. Mm-hmm. See the difference? Yeah. The truth is just, the Course said, the truth is just the opposite of everything the world teaches. It's like if you want to know what the truth is, just say, what is it that the world believes? And the Course says, now, say the truth is just the opposite of that. If the world says people die, the truth says they don't. They drop their body. They don't die. If the world says everybody's victim of everything else, the truth says no. You're a powerful creative being that creates your reality through the law of attraction, and your soul has always existed. And everything you go through has to do with a lesson in evolvement, in love, and in truth, and in peace. Even the stuff that seems like it's painful is still trying to move you toward a more loving truth. It's just the opposite. If the world says love is about exclusivity and specialness and only going toward one person and excluding everybody else in the room, the truth says love is just the opposite. Love is inclusive. It's not exclusive. The world says, well, love is about the body. The truth says love is not about the body. It can be expressed through the body as one way, but love is beyond the body. It's greater than the body. See, the truth is just the opposite. You think you're a body. So the truth says, you're not. It looks like me and you are separate. So the truth says, no, you aren't. You know, so it's just the opposite. It's just the opposite. Oh, that's good news. Exactly. Yeah, when Jesus said that on the cross, in the Spirit, it's like, forgive them, Father. And you find yourself saying that over and over again. You know, just, okay, I'm just going to overlook it because they don't really know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all the more. But the funny thing about that is that when you say I forgive them for they know not what they do, you also start forgiving yourself when you do stuff that you didn't know you were doing. It's like the mind will automatically apply that to you. If you start applying it to everybody else, you automatically start applying it to yourself. So that's very true. I love I don't know. I don't know is one of my favorite lines now.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so I can stay open. Oh, I don't know. Well, how do I know I don't know? Because I don't have peace in this situation. If I know the truth in this situation and I was in touch with the truth in this situation, how could I be so afraid? So obviously, if I'm confused, disoriented, and angry, I don't really know the answer right now. I don't really know what's going on right now, or else I wouldn't be feeling this way. So I don't know what gets you out of it. I know we'll cut off your assistance so fast it'll blow your mind, unless you really know. But to say I know, but yet you're getting the results of a person that doesn't know, is self-deception. You know, like if I say, I attracted that to myself, but I'm mad. No, I don't really know I attracted that to myself. Because if I knew I attracted that to myself, I wouldn't be mad. I would just attract something else. So there's no way I know I created and then I'm mad and acting like it can't be changed. If I know I created, then I'll just change it to something else. So really, I can tell by my emotional reactions to things what I really believe. I can work back from the effect to the cause. That's the way you get out of denial. You know, if I'm always attracted to a certain type of person, no matter what their name is, and it changes all the time, then I know that there's something in me that causes that. And if I want to change it, I don't try to change them. I try to change what's going on within myself that causes that. So I'm going to stop here. And we do the love offering. And also, I make a couple of announcements. And then we're going to do a quick review of what we covered in about a couple of minutes, just to kind of give us something to go out into the day with.
You read two paragraphs?
Yeah. Yeah. What I've learned a long time ago with the course is definitely not about speed. It's one thought. Projection makes perception. Walk out with that one thought. Projection makes perception. And so ask yourself, what do you want to project so that you can get in touch with what you want to perceive? And then get in touch, you can get in touch with your subconscious beliefs by getting in touch with how you are perceiving things right now. Because how you are perceiving things or interpreting things right now is a direct reflection of your internal dominant ideas, wishes, and emotions. And then the Course has a workbook lesson that you could look at it and say, if it is something that's upsetting you, you could say, I want another way of looking at this. Or another lesson in the workbook is, I am determined to see this differently. So the Course in Miracles has a textbook, a workbook, and a teacher's manual all in this one book. So use the lessons from the workbook. That's how you change your internal perception. Like you were saying, well, how do I make that shift? There's a workbook in the book that gives you a different idea for every day of the year that you work with to change your perception. The workbook is what makes the course happen. It's very important to get that. The textbook is the theoretical framework that tells us what the overall thought system is about. But it's the workbook that changes your perception. So to do the text without ever doing the workbook, you'll probably get frustrated and drop it. Because it's the workbook lessons that challenge your perception and change your perception. And it's really fun because if you can get past the first 100 lessons, you got it made. The first 100 are the hardest because they're the ones that are most radically different from the way that we think. And then if you do it and you get past it, you'll start finding out that it's almost like the lessons seem to be predicting what you're going to go through the next day. And it's kind of funny. You'll see how what that lesson is about was exactly what that day was about. And so you kind of start getting excited to see what the next thing is that you're going to experience that you apply that workbook lesson to. And if you stop, don't start over. Start back where you left off. Even if you get up to 100 and you stop for 6 months and you go, all right, I'm ready to do it. And you go, I'm going to start again from the beginning. Take my advice. Start back where you left off. It's a trick. It's a trick. I'm going to tell you the tricks. That's the trick. You just keep with the course, you just keep moving forward. You don't go back. You just keep moving forward. And it will all make sense. All right, you ready to go back out into the lab? It's waiting for us to see if we're ready. But, you know, I bet you got some cool stuff you like in your life and you see in your life. And realize that's also coming from your predominant wishes and ideas and beliefs about yourself. So don't just think about the stuff you don't like. What you do love is also coming from you in your consciousness, too. And it's a lot of that. I know there's a lot of that in your life. That's like, ooh, that's cool. Well, that's a reflection of you, too. Yeah. Okay. All righty. Yeah, he's dedicated.